Silence.
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 130 of Nerd Pride Radio. 130, okay, it depends on exactly which test you're using, but for IQ, 130 is generally, I don't know, very high, very extreme, superior, two standard deviations above the norm. 130 is considered pretty damn good IQ, right? Okay, and I was going to use it because my original thought was I was going to say 130, the minimum IQ needed to join Mensa. But then it turns out that Mensa is 132 on the Stanford-Binet scale, so I was wrong. But, you know, anyway, close enough. Ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Ask me. I'm awesome! My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd. Plus, there's like seven other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my head anymore. My co-host this week, R2-D2's weird cousin. Yeah, I met him last week when we were at the gaming lock-in for the Boy Scouts, and all the kids got to bring whatever games they wanted. And one kid brought the R2-D2 version of Trouble that I got my R2 out of. Right. Except that his was still the original, so it was still attached to the board, which was really weird to see because I haven't seen mine attached to the board in ages. And his still had, I mean, it's, you know, it looked right, and it had the R2-D2 in it, and it made the right noises, but it only had one die in there, one standard plain white six-sided die, and it looked so wrong. I'm so used to seeing R2 with his cool, you know, it used to be the green dice, but now it's the cool blue and silver R2 dice. I'm so used to seeing these. It's the ones, go to my Facebook page. The picture is right there. It's my Facebook picture, my profile picture. I'm so used to looking at that to see one with just the original die in it creeped me out. I really had a tough time looking at it. I'm so glad no one asked to play Trouble that night because it was creepy. All right. Anyway, enough of that. We have to get straight to the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list in my handy dandy pocket mug, which, by the way, this week I folded out of cardstock instead of regular paper. There just happened to be a piece of cardstock there. And, wow, I really like it made out of cardstock. I thought maybe it would be too thick for the wallet, but it's not. And it holds up so much better. Ooh, so nice. Anyway, the best stuff off of that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So, what's first up on the master list? It's a nerd culture report.
I thought this was bowling for weirdos.
No, Gonzo, but you are very, very close. All right, you guys know I play over at the Fantasy Movie League and fantasymovieleague.com, and we just finished up the award season. They run four seasons a year. This one happens to be called the award season. And for this season, I came in. I had dismal placing. But because it was also to coincide with the handing out of Academy Awards, some people, some users over at Fantasy Movie League decided to put together the Fantasy Movie League Awards for the year 2015, which would then they released them the same weekend as the Oscars, and it was just having fun, you know, which posters were most informative, what thread was most entertaining, what movie caused the most upset in the game. There were lots of categories, and they they went to a lot of trouble for it. They put together this whole list of categories and nominees. They put them out for votes. They collected and tallied everything. And then a handful of the guys got together and made an award show video. It's this big slideshow, and there's a whole bunch of text to it, and there's some GIFs and some other. Anyway, put together this huge, long presentation of giving out the awards. Now, the most interesting part to this, I didn't win. I tried to buy votes, and I still didn't win anything, but that's okay by me. But what did happen is, in the awards, and you gotta remember now, hold on. Last week, they put out the awards on Sunday to coincide with the Academy Awards. They put them out Sunday afternoon. Now, I was at school with my wife, I recorded my podcast, got everything done. That was episode 129 last week. Got everything done, and because the school won't let me connect to the awards thing that they had, I couldn't watch them. So I didn't get to watch them until the next morning. All right? But then, when I did watch them the next morning, here was the magic. They used members of the forums over there. They would have them as the presenters, and they wrote all these long scripts and, you know, lame award show jokes and this kind of stuff. The kind of thing you would see at award shows. They put words in everyone's mouths and had some fun with it. And so when they got to me, they used me as a presenter for one of them. And they actually wrote it out to have me, oh, well, where is he? We can't seem to find him. Oh, he's probably either spending time with his kids or recording a podcast, something dumb like that. Because, all right, they know me. That's very sweet. And then when they actually had me come out, the first thing that I say as a presenter is, hey, all right, good to be here. Hey, 129. You know what 129 is? That's the number for the Hindenburg. And had me do a little speech about 129. I didn't see it till the next morning. Little did I know it was going to be there. And I had, of course, in episode 129, if you listen to it, that was the fact I used for 129. Was episode 129 was the Hindenburg. They called it right. Guessed it dead on. That was Farva, by the way. Farva, who wrote that particular piece. Good on you, man. That was awesome. So, entertaining as crap. I think they still have the thing, linked up at the top. Although, if you guys didn't play Fantasy Movie League, you're probably not going to give a crap about it. Any of the stuff that was in there. It's a whole bunch of inside jokes and stuff related to the gameplay from the last year and all that. But it was very sweet, and it was very entertaining and thoughtful, and I laughed my ass off. So I thought that was amazing that Farva and I both nailed 129 as the Hindenburg without colluding on that one. So very cool. All right, enough of my nerd culture report. We got to get straight into the science corner.
Ooh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
And that music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something. Something disturbing happened to me this week. I was listening to the podcast TV Guidance Counselor, which I think I told you about last week, and which I'm really enjoying. And the guest was Brenda Bennett. And you don't know who Brenda Bennett is? Yeah, neither did I. But he introduces her at the beginning, and apparently she was one of the girls from Vanity Six and Apollonia from Prince's protege bands, his girl bands that he spun off during the Purple Rain era. And I'm like, oh, okay, at least I know those. All right, I wonder if I recognize her. And I do this with guests for all sorts of stuff. I go out to Wikipedia. I look up the name. It pulls up Brenda Bennett for me. I got a picture. I'm like, okay, vaguely, maybe I recognize her from the 80s. And I read up on her and noted that her age, she was born in 1962, according to Wikipedia, January of 1962, I believe. And not a big deal, so she's 50-something now or whatever it is. Yeah, 54. Anyway, doesn't matter. So as I'm listening to the podcast, they're talking about TV Guide, and one of the first stories she tells is one of her first experiences with TV Guide when she was little. She was always musical. She comes from a musical family. And one of her first experiences with TV Guide was reading in the TV Guide that the Beatles were going to be on Jack Parr. And she had never heard of them, but she was excited. She had asked her mom. She knew, because, again, very into music. And my first thought is, wait, whoa, 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 Beatles. That's a long time ago. How old would she have been? And in fact, they made a big deal talking on this show that, yeah, did you realize that the Beatles were on Jack Parr before they were on Ed Sullivan? Ah, except Jack Parr wasn't live. They pre-taped it and then broadcast it later during the show. And so Ed Sullivan became their first live podcast and the one that garnered all the attention. But Jack Parr played the Beatles in like 2-3 weeks before Sullivan did. And that was the one she saw. And she had been very excited about it because she read it in the TV guide, and then they saw it that night, and she said it just blew her away, and she talked about how inspiring it was. But, okay, here's the problem for me. Wikipedia told me that she was born in 1962, and I look it up, and they were on Jack Parr and then Ed Sullivan later in January of 64, which would have meant she would have been 2 years old, which meant she was not reading the TV guide, nor was she giving a crap what band was on. So, therefore, either she's lying, or Wikipedia's wrong. And I know what you're thinking. Ooh, Wikipedia wrong. Oh, how shocking, Mike. Yeah, I know. I know. But here's the thing. Wikipedia usually isn't wrong. For most stuff, at least. All right. And so later I look, and if you check IMDb, IMDb said she was born in 58, which would have meant she would have been 6 years old at the time of the Beatles thing. Which, okay, that's a little more reasonable. I get that one. And I'm going to guess that it's not that she's lying. It's that Wikipedia happens to be wrong, and IMDb has this one correct. Okay, great. But having said that, then, it brings me to, yeah, that's right. Wikipedia can be wrong a lot, can't it? And so, now I remember years ago, because I've always had this, I like Wikipedia, I use Wikipedia, I most of the time will trust Wikipedia. Because also I'm not doing anything that's really super important, so unless you consider this podcast super important, which I do. Alright, but in general, you know, Wikipedia is good enough for my uses, and for the most part, I think it's fairly accurate. And I remember that, you know, I've always based it on this study that I heard about ages ago, where they looked at, they compared Encyclopedia Britannica to Wikipedia and found out that on major articles, the two had fairly similar error rates. That Wikipedia was, yeah, they occasionally made mistakes, but so did Encyclopedia Britannica, one of the most trusted names, maybe the most trusted name in encyclopedias. But I thought, okay, but that was like 10 years ago that I saw that. Is that still true? Is Wikipedia still, times have changed and the processes have changed and how Wikipedia gets updates has changed. Is it still as accurate as it used to be? So I went out and did some looking. And if you do a Google search for it, the very first thing you get is a Wikipedia article entitled Reliability in Wikipedia Articles. God darn it. But it is a really great place to get information from, isn't it? So that's where I started my search, but I linked out to some other stuff. And as it turns out, one of the first things that most articles that talk about the reliability of Wikipedia, the first thing they do is link to that exact same article that I saw. That same information, that study it was 42 articles in Wikipedia, 42 articles in Encyclopedia Britannica, and the experts, the panel of experts examining articles from both of them found 4 what they called serious errors. I mean, there's minor details here and there on both, but 4 serious errors in the 42 Wikipedia articles, and also 4 serious errors in the 42 Encyclopedia Britannica articles. So they were evenly matched. But again, that was a while ago. So I take a look and, you know, there were some informal ones. One I really liked, livescience.com. And I don't know if they have an actual magazine, Live Science, that's connected to it, but livescience.com, mentioned that they had a theoretical physicist come in and look at the Wikipedia article for dark energy. And then that was looking at, you know, sciences, some hard academia type stuff. And the physicist came in and said, yeah, dark energy is actually fairly accurate. I mean, there's some minor quibbles here, but this is pretty accurate information. Very detailed, long article, lots of information. And then they said, okay, so that's academia. Now what about on the pop culture side? Because the Encyclopedia Britannica and other traditional sources like that very, very rarely have comprehensive stuff about pop culture because pop culture shifts and changes so much. It's not the kind of thing that you keep in an encyclopedia. And so they looked at the article for Passion Pit, the band, who I almost saw in concert, by the way. They looked at that, okay, because we wanted to go see, what was the name of that band? Matt and Kim. Aiden loves the band Matt and Kim, and he really, really wanted to see Matt and Kim. They were playing at a college in Iowa, and Matt and Kim was opening for Passion Pit. And before we went, we looked up some Passion Pit. We listened to some of their music, watched them on YouTube. And we decided that, we don't really care for Passion Pit. It just wasn't our thing. And so we showed up. We watched Matt and Kim. And then we looked at the crowd and the space we were in. And I said, well, you want to hang out for Passion Pit? And he's like, no, let's drive home. We're done now. So we watched the opening act and we left. Anyway, so they looked at the Live Science again. I'm going back to them. They looked at the article for Passion Pit, and they had the drummer from Passion Pit to consult with and say, so, how's it going? And he says, no, this is a bunch of crap. He said there was so much factually inaccurate stuff in there. I mean, like 10 or 12 major things that were just wrong, just plain old wrong. And how this guy never actually looked at the Passion Pit article on Wikipedia before, I will never know. But he clearly was speaking as if he had never seen it before. If I had a Wikipedia article about me, you know I would be checking that thing. I love myself. That would be awesome. So awesome. I'd be sharing it with everybody. Oh my God, look, I'm in Wikipedia. So Live Science's conclusion was, on most of the academia type stuff, that was the phrase they kept using, is academia. They said, most of that kind of stuff, it's fairly accurate. All right. That stuff can be fairly complete. But where it comes to pop culture stuff, where it comes to media stuff, they said, there's money to be made in that. And therefore, it's a lot more subject to the whims of the public. That's the popular stuff, the money-making stuff. There's lots of people and lots of reasons that things would get screwed up in there. Because I think, look, for me, I've only caught Wikipedia in two errors. One, Brenda Bennett. And two, when I was doing some research on different animals, I needed sizes of North American mammals. I needed height, weight, stats on ages and this kind of stuff. And I looked up bears, and the entire article on bears in Wikipedia at that moment, I go to look at bears, it pulls up the Wikipedia article, and the entire body of the article, all it says is, bears are giant mammals that like to have sex with men. That was it. Done. All right. Clearly someone had vandalized it. I went off and did some other stuff. I went back to that article like 15 minutes later. It was already fixed and reverted back to the original, and all the information was there. But, again, for the moment I looked, the moment I did my research, it was wrong. And so the conclusion I've come to is, all right, Wikipedia is still fairly reliable for most stuff. But again, pop culture stuff, political stuff. I mean, people have lots of motivation to go in and either pump up their own information or slander rivals in some way. There are lots of Wikipedia editors who are paid to go in there and make certain people look good, to plant references to their client in various Wikipedia articles, kind of spread their cachet, as it were. And the people who have been caught doing that have been fired. They're no longer allowed to edit Wikipedia. But, that's just the ones that have been caught. Like 300-400 of them have been caught doing it and have been barred from Wikipedia. But how many have we not caught? There's a lot out there. So again... The thing that everyone says about Wikipedia, because a lot of people act like, if you trust Wikipedia, I do most of the time. I'm not going to stake my life on it. But I might stake $50 on it if it came down to a bet, Wikipedia is not, it's fairly reliable, especially as a frontline piece of information. And so then there's lots of other people that say, well, sure, you can start with Wikipedia, but then you always have to verify. You always have to double check. Well, you know what? You should be double checking any information you got. If you're gonna build your case on a single source of information, well, be prepared to be proven wrong at some point because you didn't bother to check. And I'm not saying that as in I'm looking down on people who do that, because I do that all the time. I will find one article, one Wikipedia source, and a lot of times I'll quote it and say it as if it means something, and I didn't bother to check because, I saw it and I made conversation about it. If you want to make sure you got your ducks in a row, then double check anything, obviously. Okay, that's enough of my science corner. And was that really science? I was going to make it, I did reference scientific studies. Well, were they controlled studies? I don't know. I don't know if that was really scientific. Maybe I should have put it somewhere else. Doesn't matter. because we're onto my gaming table.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
Role-playing games, video games, board games, card games, any games, if it fits on my gaming table, I am here to share it with you. Okay, Paranoia is going to be coming up soon. And so for those of you who, and I'm not saying that you should sign up for Paranoia because the registration's already closed, but for those of you who are signed up, the 12 of you, come on, get your crap together, man. I need some email addresses. I need some character ideas. Connect with me and I'll get back to you. And if you don't want to make your own character, just let me know. I'll do all the work. I just have to know what you want. That's all I'm saying. All right. But the reason it's time to get moving on my Paranoia game is because my brother's game of Homeroom, where we're playing junior high kids, in an alien, die, repeat, Edge of Tomorrow, Groundhog's Day. Anyway, we're playing a time loop repeating sort of scenario, and, I'm dead. So, my character, Harley, she's dead. She's dead. I'm out of the game. I'm dead. I'm not bitter. I'm a little bitter. Anyway, that game is still wrapping up. There are still several players in it, and we'll see where they wind up. And my brother promises there will be answers in the end. Yeah, like there were answers at the end of Lost. Yeah, is that what this is? I know how you operate. Oh, not bitter. Not bitter. All right. But also, as long as I'm at my gaming table, I think there is still time left for this. Let me double check though before I speak, because I'd feel really foolish if it's closed already. Whoa, there's time remaining, but just barely. The Pathfinder book bundle on Humble Bundle.com. They allow you to buy, a lot of times it's video games, software, but they also occasionally have books in electronic format, and they let you buy a bundle of stuff, a ton of stuff, for dirt cheap, all right? And what happens is when you pay for it, and you have an option. The more you spend, the more you get. But you pay what you want. If you want to pay as little as a dollar, you get the basic bundle. If you're willing to pay more than, you know, X amount, then you'll also get this extra bit added to your bundle. And, oh, you want to pay more than this amount? You get even this more added to your bundle. And of the money you give them, you then get to designate how much of that money goes to charity, how much of that money goes to the Humble Bundle people, and how much of that money goes to the people that actually are giving you this product. All right, so in this case, it's Pathfinder. That's why I'm bringing it up. Pathfinder right now says there's 2 more days left on it, so by the time you hear this tomorrow morning, Monday morning, there'll be a day left, day and a half left, something like that. So if you are interested in buying a whole bunch of electronic versions of Pathfinder books, get on over to humblebundle.com. I think it's at $18. If you pay more than the average of $18, then you get 20 books, a huge number of books. You get 20, Pathfinder rule books in electronic format plus, well, and I say 20, but then there's also a bonus bundle of 23 adventures. That you can also have all included in that same price. If you want to pay $25, they'll even send you the beginner box set to your house. All right. In non-electronic format. Because that's why it's a box set. So, it is a great deal. For $18, a ton of books. All right. And some of the books are ones that I already own. Some of them are books that I can get, you can get free online, because Paizo is nice enough to provide almost all of its rules content for free online. That's how much faith they have in their product. They give it away for free electronically. And then if you want to buy it, you'll come to them. And you know what? I do. I give them my money all the time because I love what they do. But also, in addition to those rule books, they also have like the map bundle. Oh my God. One of the map books. You can't get those. Well, I mean, you could. You can search around. There are people who have posted the maps online somewhere, but to hear having them in nice, easy reference format, to be able to get all of these adventure paths and adventure modules, it's dirt cheap. So I've got it. A bunch of people on my website have already bought it. I mentioned it to my son, who was just putting together some stuff, and he was so excited. He loves Humble Bundle. He does that all the time for video game stuff. And he went out and got himself the Pathfinder bundle immediately. He was so excited. So because I love Pathfinder and Paizo, and because I appreciate Humble Bundle, I've just given you a 5-minute ad for them because they're awesome. All right. And no one's paying me to say that. I just love them. All right. No one pays me to do anything. I know. Some of you guys have offered. That's, I'm not saying, I'm not putting a donate button out there. I'm not looking for you guys to support me. I'm just saying, hey, anything that I put on here is because that's what I feel excited about. It's what I feel strongly about. It's not for the cash. If someone wants to give me lots of money, who can afford to give me lots of money, you are welcome to do that. But yeah, you don't gotta. That's not what I do this for. Okay. After my gaming table. Oh, it's time for. Do I need to snap, or is that just distracting? I'll skip that. That was dorky. I think this is the second time I've done it this show. Third, if you include that last one. It's time for Roku! Roku is the streaming box I watch all of my television on nowadays. Netflix, Hulu, YouTube, whatever it is I watch. And we've been watching Orange is the New Black, which I told you that, and I love Orange is the New Black. It's great. We're already into the third season, and it is one of the most amazing shows on television. It is really, really good. It is amazing to see a show that is that female-centric, and I enjoy it because it's cool to see female versions of characters that you've only ever seen as men before. For example, for those of you who have watched the show, there's a couple of meth heads that work down in the laundry. And the meth head girls, and I don't even know what their names are in the show, everyone just calls them the meth heads. And the meth heads are a couple of idiots. All right, they are ugly, doofy looking. They are just complete boneheads all the time. They are essentially, and they're comic relief. That's what they're intended for most of the time. And they are essentially Lenny and Squiggy. They might as well be. That, how many times have you seen that archetype before? Where it is a pair of idiots, alright? A pair of idiots who always hang out together, and they always misunderstand the situation, but they always act like they're really onto something, like they really get what's going on. But they're morons and they're bumblers. It's Lenny and Squiggy. Lenny and Squiggy is the most basic prototype of that form. That I think most people would be familiar with, but it comes up all the time. In a sense, C-3PO and R2 are like that. I know R2's the smart one, but it's essentially like that. Jay and Silent Bob. Granted, Silent Bob eventually turns out to have a brain every time, but it's that same kind of thing that you get these two, bumbling comic relief idiots that are off to the side. And only once in a long while do they become really relevant. Mostly they're just there for comic relief. And so to see the meth heads, to see a female version of that, I'm trying to think, and I'm sure if I ask now, I am sure that you guys can come up with several examples of female versions of that archetype that have existed and I'm just either unfamiliar with or I'm forgetting about. But it doesn't come up often, not nearly as often as you see dudes in that role. All right. And that's what this whole show has. There's a lot of that. That these are typical characters where you would normally, by default, when we create a character, whether it is in a movie, a TV show, a book, a game, we create characters by default. We always think of those characters. Well, and I say we, I'm saying general American culture, Western culture. In general, you come up with a character and you by default think of them as male. That if it's not male, if it's not a white male in particular, a white hetero male, if there's someone who's going to be of color or female or gay, those are considered distinguishing marks that, well, you'd have to have a reason to put that in there. If not, if that doesn't contribute to the character's central joke, then yeah, you're just putting in distractions now. Why would you do that? So by default, we go with white straight male. And that was actually one of the things that BoJack Horseman was about. Is that in BoJack Horseman, it was, one of the writers talked about it, I can't remember which writer it was, talked about putting stuff in there, and the showrunner would immediately challenge assumptions about whether, what the character looked like, whether they're male or female. You, your basic assumptions that you make about a character, well, okay, when you've got two dogs standing on the corner and the two dogs are making this kind of interaction, because BoJack Horseman is anthropomorphic animals, and you've got, you know, these two dog characters, they're on the corner, and it's just a one-time throwaway joke, and oh yeah, well, what if they were female? Well, why? Well, why wouldn't they be? Why are you just assuming? And you look at the joke and you go, oh yeah, the joke works perfectly either way. So why wouldn't you mix it up a little bit? You know, it's that kind of stuff. So again, in a world where we just make that assumption about characters that male is the default of stuff, it's just really cool to see a show in which, because of the nature of the show, because it is a women's prison, therefore, and they have a huge cast. Oh my God, we're looking to see some character that just got introduced, well, reintroduced, sort of, Lolly, who we weren't really familiar with. And we're like, where have we seen her before? Who is that? And we go to look her up, and it's Lori Petty. So to me, I'm like, oh, it's Tank Girl. And my wife goes, I have no idea what that means. So I keep looking, and I go, League of Their Own? Oh, she was Kit. That's right. Okay, good. See, we each have our references. And, but as I'm looking up to find her name, that is a huge cast list. It goes on for miles. And it's not like they're all named characters, and they're all characters I recognize. It's not like I'm going through and it's like, you know, guard number three, guard number four, prisoner in background. No, it's none of that. They all have names, and I know their names. It's detailed and involved, and it's glorious. But again, because of the nature of the show being set in a women's prison, it means that when a character comes up, by default, well, we're in a women's prison. By default, characters are going to be women. That's just how it works. I find it fascinating. And it's a great show. The characters are awesome. The interactions are awesome. It's fun. It is so much fun to watch. It's a great show. But the reason I brought it up is we were watching, and I think we were maybe the beginning of the second season, and they had one of their many nude scenes. You get a lot of female nudity in this show. Very occasionally male nudity. But again, it's a women's prison. So there's going to be female nudity, and when there is sex, it is quite often lesbian sex. Which, by the way, that's another thing about this show. Boy, have they figured out a way to make lesbian sex not hot. It is just, there's so many times when it's just the realities of what lesbian sex in prison would look like, the realities of the situations that they're in, the people that are around them, the things that happen. It's just, it's sex, and it's integral to the story, and it's important, but boy, hot is not the way to describe it most of the time. So if that's what you're getting into it for, yeah, no. Don't watch it for the nudity and the sex. That's not the point. But anyway, we had just seen a nude scene. And again, I think this was the beginning of season two. And my wife said, they are really progressive and really feminist, but have you noticed that it's only the young, attractive ones that we ever get to see naked? It's only the young, skinny, hot ones that wind up showing their boobs in this show. You know, if they're going to be progressive and all, they've got lots of women's body types in here, lots of ages and demographics. I mean, this is a very broad, diverse array of women in this show, and yet it's only the hot ones that take their clothes off. What's up with that? Which I thought was interesting, and it's kind of a statement. I didn't know exactly what the statement was, but it's, yeah, you know what? That does seem a little weird, doesn't it? And then, as if they heard us in retrospect, because, you know, of course, we're watching this a month ago, and, you know, these shows came out last season. But as if they heard us, suddenly, by the end of season two and now going into season three, oh, yeah, you know what? We're seeing a little more diversity in the nudity. I mean, sometimes it's just in the background, but, yeah, a lot more body types taking their clothes off. And, well, I guess all's fair, right? So, I mean, it was nice to see. It's nice to see that they have the balance and that they're not, I guess because when they're only showing the most classically attractive women with their clothes off, it's as if, well, they're still doing it for cheesecake. It's still for titillation purposes. It's still for, and that shouldn't be what it's about. They make it gritty. They make it, you know, as gritty as a comedy can be, but they make it, you know, again, the sex part is just not, for the most part, hot. So the nudity shouldn't be for titillation purposes either. And they've kind of fixed that. I was very impressed. Anyway, random observations. So, enough about Roku. As I often do, I'm going to put off the unnamed history segment until next week. In fact, next week, maybe I'll open with it so I can do it justice. I've got a lot written and, I don't have enough time for it. So we're going to end the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. And we're going to go straight to the pod-o-matic. Hot dog, this is the Nerd Pride Radio pod-o-matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out pod-o-matic bubble. He rolls up random topics for me to talk about. Where do these topics come from, you ask? I hear you asking. Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. I will add it to my Podomatic list. Podomatic is about whatever you want it to be. And R2's first roll is 78, which means I actually have to pull up the Podomatic list. Hold on. Here it is. Okay, 78 is from Billy Bob. Billy Bob says, a major comics company calls you, and in parentheses he says, take your pick. Oh, Marvel called me? Sweet. His question goes on. And they want you to run/write, he actually wrote out the word slash, it says run/write, a comic for them. What would you want to work on? Oh, probably an X title. Probably X-Men. Is that cliche? I don't know. I love X-Men. I love X-Men. I love the mutants. I love the interactions of them. I love everything about them. There's so many possibilities there. I would probably do X-Men. And, you know, since I've got my 1 year to work with them, I would do something drastic. I would completely revamp the lineup, getting all sorts of characters I've always wanted to work with, getting some of the classics that maybe have moved on. And see, I don't even know the state of comics right now. I don't know where everybody is. I don't know what they're doing. I couldn't tell you who's currently in the X-Men right now. But I would make it my own. What? Oh, okay. Or wait a minute. When you say, what would I want to work on? Maybe I don't have to pick an established title. Maybe Marvel is calling me and giving me my own comic book, letting me create my own character or characters and working with them. Okay, because I don't know if I even want to bring it up because the one character is kind of weird and kind of complicated, but all right. From back when I was playing superheroes role-playing games as a kid, specifically Villains and Vigilantes first, and then Champions later, because I think I created, one of these characters was created in Villains and Vigilantes, and one was done in Champions. But both of them were characters that I just loved. One was White Mouse, and White Mouse is a very simple character it's a character who, werewolf-style, transforms into a giant mouse, except for some reason, should have been a squirrel, because the white mouse in transformed mouse form actually had flying squirrel type membranes from between the legs and could glide for long distances. And I think I can't remember if I was inspired by the Yazarians of what was the name of that? Star Frontiers, that was the game. So I don't know if I was inspired by the ape-like Yazarians of Star Frontiers, or if it was simply because I found the gliding rules in one of the games, and I decided to pump them up and go, okay, to what extreme can I take the gliding rules? How close can I get this to actual flight? And I just played with the rules until I came up with, wow. So if I spend this many points, it must have been in Champions that I did it. And I said, if I spend this many points, I can glide that far? All right, cool. And so I worked it all in. I'm like, okay, what does the character look like? And then I decided to go with the White Mouse. So a giant rodent that can glide far enough that it's almost flying. All right. That's one character. And then the other character, and I've always, because I created them around the same time, and they've always, it's the only two superheroes I've created as a kid that have stuck with me. So I've always imagined them working as some sort of team. But the other one is Rook, and originally named Black Rook. And it was not intentional that it had White Mouse and Black Rook. Just happened to be that way. But then I found out that there is the Black Rook is one of the members of the Hellfire Club because they were all named after chess pieces and all that. And so I just went with Rook after that. Rook, all right, here's the power. Rook has the ability to, it is chess based, by the way. Rook has the ability to project from himself or herself. It's gone back and forth that both of these characters, White Mouse has generally always been a female character. Rook has switched back and forth between male and female many times over the years, depending on when I've envisioned it, what setting I was going to use it in for a game or whatever else. And so Rook, I haven't decided yet. But Rook can project, I'm just going to say male for now, for ease of pronouns. Hold on. All right, so anyway, Rook can project from himself a perfect duplicate of himself, except it's insubstantial. All right, so this duplicate can go wander around. He can send it off to go anywhere, do whatever he wants. He can, in most versions of the character, he can actually see through his duplicate's eyes, hear through its ears, control its every motion wherever it is. And because it's insubstantial, it can't get hurt. It can slip into areas undetected. And then when he needs to, he then pulls the move called castling. This is the chess reference, where he just instantly swaps places with his duplicate. So now he's over there and the illusory duplicate is over here. And he can switch back and forth, as many times as he wants. So in combat, very effective because by switching back and forth rapidly, he can punch from different angles. But by the time you turn around to hit him, he's already gone and he's over in the other body by that point. And the original version, and sometimes I've left this out, but I think I would leave it in, is the original conception was every time he makes that switch, he winds up building up some sort of static charge, electrical charge. And so that after he switches back and forth enough times, he's built up a charge that if he touches someone with bare skin, transfers the shock to them, and it can be powerful enough to knock them out. It's not going to kill somebody unless they've got maybe a pacemaker or a heart condition or something. But in general, he can stun somebody with this electrical shock. And all right, that's Rook. I love Rook. And also because of the static electricity, Rook, in whether it's male or female, Rook is always bald. Always shaves the head bald because otherwise the static does really weird things to the hair, even with the mask on. Once you take the hood off, everything's all frizzy and fly away. Nobody wants that. Those are the two characters. And when I first created them, all I created was powers. I should sit down and develop some personalities for them. I've only vaguely thought about that because I had powers down and I kind of put them together as partners, and so I came up with some adventures for them, but it wasn't deep. I was 14, 15 when I first came up with these, so it was never anything really deep. But man, I should put together personalities, some ideas for them. Wow, I don't know what I'd use it for. But, I'll use it when Marvel calls me. My God, who knows when they're going to get in touch with me? I need to have my ideas in a row. I need to be ready for this. So, but anyway, those are my two characters, is White Mouse and Rook. And Rook has always been my favorite. I love Rook. If I got to play in a superhero game again, I would make Rook. I would use Rook as a character. That's who I want to be. I love that character. But anyway, enough of that one. 42. Mm-hmm. Hold on. Sorry. I gotta remember to talk. All right. It's from Kaz. Hey, Kaz. Kaz says, what was your favorite nerd moment in 2015? Why? Well, all right. In my personal life or in all of nerdity? Because, depending on which way you ask the question, the answer is still the same. It was the best 4 days in gaming. It was Gen Con. Oh, I love Gen Con. And I mean, for me, the highlight of Gen Con, there was so much awesome stuff there. I got to watch Chewbacca play the cello and get a picture of Dave standing with Chewbacca and his cello. How awesome was that? That's nerd gloriousness. But it was, to me, it was the fervor of playing that game of Kobolds. And I don't need to rave about Kobolds yet again, but I love kobolds. And it was that game, that moment. That was that I was so worked up. I know everyone was having a good time, but sometimes I talk it up so much that I think, God, was I just going overboard and maybe nobody was as into the moment as I was? I don't remember, but man, it was so much fun. But Gen Con by a mile. It was the greatest thing ever in nerdity in 2015. Even if you're not me, my experience at Gen Con was still the highlight of the year. So, all right. 12. 12 is from, there it is. Oh, it's from my wife, Lisa. And my wife, Lisa, says, I was just talking about Chewbacca. Do your best Chewbacca impression. All right, hold on. Give me a minute. No, that's not it. It's not, I gotta get more of a gurgle in there. I'm a little bit dry. Hold on. No? No, I got nothing here. I'm trying, but God, because I, you know what? We were doing Chewbacca impressions, me and Noah, the other day, and he was doing his Chewbacca impression, which wasn't bad. For a 9-year-old, I'll give him that one. And so I did mine, and, you know, of course, me, you know me, I hate my own impressions. I don't think I'm that good an actor. I don't do voices very well, as much as my wife might keep pressing me to do them here. And after I got done, Noah went, oh my gosh, you do a really good Chewbacca, which I was shocked, absolutely shocked. So hold on, let me get a drink here, magical Diet Dr. Pepper, to help me along. Let's try one more time. No, I'm not going to be able to get it. Man, it's not even, my throat is so dry. There was a, when I was doing it with Noah the other day, I could feel it. I could feel it right there in the back of the throat where it's supposed to be. And it was really glorious. But, I mean, you know, again, I thought it was pretty crappy, but it was good enough. It was serviceable enough that I'm willing to try here. Nah, it just came out sounding like Kermit the Frog. It's not going to work for me. No, 42 again. That's not going to work for us. Let's try, oh, there we go. 38. That's a little better. And 38 comes from Zimny. Oh, Zim, I haven't heard from you in so long. Zimny says, what 5 things are a must in a witch's brew? Okay, look. A toad. Live or dead, doesn't make any difference. Sometimes maybe it'll just be a wart of toad, but certainly Eye of Newt. Eye of Newt is always in there. I would do double doses of both toil and trouble and an entire bottle of Captain Morgan's. So those would be the 5 things that for sure have to be in there, but, you know, there's lots of other possibilities. 42. Good Lord, R2, what is wrong with you today? There we go. 91. He really wants me to go back to 42. I don't get that. 91 is from Ronster. Ronster says, could the ice rings of some planets be used to put water on another planet that had no water? What if there are microbes in it? Okay. The answers are yes. Absolutely. And, all right, because, yes, absolutely. If there's ice in those rings, then certainly that would be a lovely way to scoop up some water and carry it somewhere else, because it's in orbit. It's a lot easier to get than actually going down to a planet and scooping it off of even Mars with its low gravity. You know, you have to go down to Mars, you got to get back out of that gravity well. But you take something out of orbit, you pick up, you know, an icy comet that happens to be coming around. Comets are a little harder to grab because their orbits are eccentric. But if you can find ice on something like an asteroid or the frozen rings of Saturn or whatever, if there is water ice to be had in there, then yeah, you could grab it from there. That would, again, a lot easier than bringing it up off of a planet. That would be great. But then he also asks, what if there are microbes in it? If there are microbes in it, then all of science gets to rejoice that we've discovered life outside of our planet. Wouldn't that be amazing? Wouldn't it be unreal to find life that didn't originate on Earth? Although it's potential that maybe it did originate on Earth and it just, you know, asteroid impacts kicked stuff back out into orbit and maybe somehow it wound up in Saturn's rings. But highly unlikely. Highly unlikely. That would be amazing if we found microbes in it. And, you know, if so, then obviously, you know, we'd have to do more than your standard filtration and sterilization and all that to get ourselves some pure water out of it. But, you know, we could still purify water. That's not a big deal, even if there's microbes in it. Even if there's some living thing, some, you know, most contaminants in water, whether biological or not, we can figure out a way to remove them. That's what we do. We're good at that. So, yeah, it could certainly be done. That's a good idea. All right. I was going to ring up R2 again, but I'm not going to, because we've still got listener betrayal to take care of. So, let me turn it over to GLaDOS first, and she'll give us a recap of the episode so far.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week, Weezer's in the Garage, and She Blinded Me with Science as performed by William Shatner. All of my bumper songs are available on iTunes. You check them out, you buy them, you enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. Want instructions on making your own very own pocket mod? You go over to pocketmod.com, you'll get instructions right over there. If you want to do something nice for my podcast, recommend it to a friend. You enjoy it. Why wouldn't you let other people enjoy it as well? Talk to them. Convince them. Get them on board. Give them a listen. Remember, I am always looking for you guys to do my work for me. So don't forget to send me questions or topics for my Podomatic. Or watch every week on the forums, nerdbyradio.com/forums, and over on Facebook for Listener Betrayal. If you've got a really interesting nerd fact about an upcoming episode, you want to give me a co-host, what Nerd Pride smells like, send it to me. Save me all of that grueling research. If you guys send it, you know I will use it. I am that lazy. My contact information, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on Twitter, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be totally honest, the very best way to talk to me is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up there, you send me a message, we will hang out together. We'll become best friends in the world. We'll have fun. And now it's time for a little listener betrayal. Before I start every podcast, I head out to my website and to Facebook, and I post up, hey, I'm recording. If you guys want in on this sucker, post it up. I will make it part of my podcast. And that is what I've done today. So, starting off over at my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums, I have DM Darks. DM Darks says, why are dingleberries brown? It's just the way shit is. Okay. It was a riddle. That's good. So, hold on. With the right inflection. Why are dingleberries... All right, I got a riddle for you. Why are dingleberries brown? And then they come up with something. You go, it's just the way shit is. All right, that's pretty good. Next from DM Darks. Who would win in a fight? A rhinoceros armed with a chainsaw that believes it's invisible? Or... hold on. One of the aliens from Avatar in a jet fighter, but its hands are covered in butter. Okay, the rhinoceros... Okay, a rhinoceros armed with a chainsaw that believes it's invisible. Or one of the giant aliens from Avatar in a jet fighter with hands covered in butter. Why would the rhinoceros' chainsaw think it's invisible? And why would that matter to the rhino? I don't... All right, in this case, it would be the Na'vi from Avatar in the jet fighter. You know why? Because he doesn't need his hands to fly that thing. He's got his tail plugged into it. Oh, you're such a sucker. I can't believe you fell for that. Yeah, he's flying this whole thing by thought. All right? Rhino's got no chance. Sorry. All right. Next up, Lucy. Lucy says, cage match. Who wins? All right. In this cage match, an angry, thick-skinned octopus that can attack with a knife in each tentacle, or... a Cheshire Cat with a single bite attack that teleports between rounds and has near total concealment. Or three, 300 tiny monkeys occupying four contiguous 5x5 squares. Alright, in this particular one, the 300 tiny monkeys are going to win. Because, again, Cheshire Cat, you can teleport all you want. And even with your near total concealment, when a wave of 300 monkeys washes over you, it doesn't matter where you're hiding. You're found, and you're done. And yeah, you're going to bite a monkey. You're going to bite two monkeys. You might even bite four monkeys. But guess what? Monkeys got 300. All right, 300 little rhesus monkeys crawling all over you. No, Cheshire Cat's out. It's cute, it's clever, but it's out. Unless it's teleporting outside the cage to escape, in which case it is disqualified. So the monkeys still win, but at least the Cheshire Cat can live. Now, Angry Thick-Skinned Octopus. This is where the real challenge is. It's 300 monkeys pitted against the Angry Octopus with a knife in each tentacle. The monkeys are going to steal those knives very quickly, one per round, and unfortunately, the monkeys would not use those knives. They would want to, but according to the rules, no, they just wind up breaking them. But eventually, 300 monkeys are going to overwhelm that octopus, I think. Alright, it depends on the size of the octopus. Alright? Because most octopi, octopodes, are not that huge. Okay, you can think of these giant ones attacking pirate ships on the high seas or whatever, but you know, that's myth. A real octopus, no matter how angry or thick-skinned it is still, you know, a small creature, according to D&D standards. So, it's not going to be huge, and I think the monkeys would overwhelm it eventually. Plus, it's on land, which they can function pretty well on land, but it's not its favorite environment. If all this takes, if the cage match is in water, well, sure. Octopus has it. I'll give it to the octopus on that one, because the monkeys don't deal as well underwater. They just don't. All right, but assuming that we're on dry land in a cage, yeah, the monkeys will take this. All right, number two. Lucy also asks, how awesome is DM Darks? Eh, he's all right. I mean, you know, smells a little, but nice guy. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. He's so awesome. And then she finally asks, what Regina Spektor song would you most like to hear Sphere cover on its second album, and why? Considering I don't know any Regina Spektor songs, I don't know. Or at least, I don't know any that they haven't already covered. How's that? I guess the theme song to Orange is the New Black is Regina Spektor, isn't it? I do know that one. I'm not real fond of it. Hold on. Let me go look. Jeez. Oh, I'm so glad I looked. Fidelity. Of course, Fidelity. Yeah, I know. Everyone knows Fidelity. Well, okay, more people would know Fidelity than most of her other songs. But I love that song. I love that song. And I know, it's kind of cheesy, whatever, but I think it's beautiful. I think it's absolutely beautiful. I would love to hear that. All the rest of her stuff? Nope. I'm looking at the list of top songs from Regina Spektor, and that's the only one I'm recognizing. Sorry. That's all I got. But I love Fidelity. So I'll go with that one. All right, that's it for my website. Let's go on over to Facebook, hold on. Let's go check over at Fantasy Movie League. I put up one over there just to see if anyone would respond. And did they? Oh, my gosh, they did. Well, all right. Go Fantasy Movie League. All right, let me put in a reply here and say, done. You guys are awesome. I'll even type that. You guys are awesome. All right, and it says... All right, from Bill Kitten's Bill Kitten's Cineplex. She says, Batman versus Superman. Will you be seeing it opening weekend? No, probably not, but I will see it in the theater. I might see it opening weekend, depending on what's going on, but yes, I'll definitely see it in the theater. Also, Team Batman or Team Superman, and will it open over or under the long-range forecast of 159 million? Oh, that's a tough one. Okay. First off, I'm going to be Team Batman on this one, because, again, I bought and loved the original Dark Knight when it first came out back when I was in high school. Love that comic. Love old Batman wearing that battle armor suit and taking down Superman because that's what needs to be done. Oh, it was gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. And here's the deal is, in the philosophies here, I like what they're doing with Batman versus Superman. I don't know about anybody else. I have no problem with Ben Affleck Ben Affleck Batman. I have no problem with the trailers that they've shown, the way they're going to pit these two against each other. Both of them are heroes, but both of them have questionable things about them. All right, Batman is a masked vigilante operating from darkness, above the law or around the law. And I can see why people would have a problem with him, why Superman would have a problem with him. Whereas Superman, look, he's this uncontrolled power from outside of our world. He's an alien, for God's sake. And he comes down here where we've got, I love the trailers that show him, with the cults worshiping him as a god, while other peoples are condemning him. And the idea that he comes to this planet and, yeah, he says he's doing good. He's trying to do good, but no. Look at the destruction that follows in his wake. Look at the horrible things that happens, and specifically the idea of Bruce Wayne being there and seeing Wayne Industries get hit and suffering all this destruction. And it is, I mean, to Bruce Wayne, to Batman, the effect of Superman, it was being ground floor at 9/11. They're not making any bones about this parallel at all. That for him, this is like the terrorists coming down on the World Trade Center. And that's how he views Superman. I don't blame him. I think it's brilliant. I really do. I'm really excited about this. All right. Long range forecast of 159 million. I'm up for some record breaking. I really am. I know that that's really, really reaching. Okay. I know it seems like a lot, but look, if cheesy ass Jurassic World can pull in that much, all right. Because cheesy-ass Jurassic World hit 208 in the middle of summer. I think Batman Superman can give that a run for its money. I don't know that they're going to beat Jurassic World. But we've shown this year already with Deadpool and with Zootopia that it's a year for breaking records. It really is. And I will probably... man, if the over-under... on this one, if it's going to be valued at 159 million, then yeah, I'll buy in on that one because it's going to make more than that. That's where my money goes right now. But you know what? I'll change my mind 800 times before then because I can never trust my own judgment on these movies. All right. The next one is, oh, it's from Farva, Large Farva, who wrote the awesome lines for me for the FML Awards. All right. He first has in quotes, "Diane, I'm holding in my hand a small box of chocolate bunnies. Thanks to the magic of Google and YouTube, I am aware that that is a quote from the pilot episode of Twin Peaks, which I never saw." So, he follows his quote with, "I'm excited about returning to the eccentric world of Twin Peaks next year. What about you? Never did see it. I always wanted to." Is it on Netflix now? Because if it is, that may be one of the next ones that I watch, because I've always wanted to see Twin Peaks, and I never have. And anything that I might have known about Twin Peaks that was spoiler-ish, I've long since forgotten because I had no context in which to keep that information. Therefore, I know pretty much nothing. But yes, I'm excited about the idea of it. I would like to watch the original. I don't know how well it holds up after all this time. And then, based on that, will I watch the new one? Depends on how much I like the original, if I've had a chance to see it. If I haven't had a chance to watch it by then no. No, I probably won't be excited at all. But, do you enjoy the acquired taste that is David Lynch? Well, yes. Yes, I do, to a degree. Because, here's the thing, I haven't seen much David Lynch. All right, I will tell you first off, go to IMDb and look at his IMDb photo. That is friggin' awesome. That is one of the greatest IMDb photos ever. That man, that is distinguished. That is an amazing picture. It really is. I mean, just that's a great look. You just have to go look at it. Go. I'll give you time. Okay, that was enough time. You should have learned how to pause the podcast to go do stuff like that. Seriously. All right. But I never saw Eraserhead. Really want to. I've never seen Twin Peaks. I never saw Mulholland Drive. I did see Dune, and I enjoyed Dune while not enjoying Dune. I loved the book. The movie was a bit of a mess. I saw Blue Velvet. I enjoyed Blue Velvet. But you know what? I haven't acquired that taste yet. I'm sorry, dude. I'm sorry. I would love to come off as being cool here, but I just can't. I haven't seen enough. But yeah, I would like to. I understand people really, really love David Lynch. And I appreciate that I'm trying to combine the word eccentric and eccentricities at the same time, and it's not working. I appreciate that eccentric nature, and I would love to see more. All right, you know what? I'm going to seek out the original Twin Peaks, and see if I can't find it somewhere that I can watch it for free, because that would be cool. Or maybe I'll go watch Mulholland Drive. I've always wanted to do that one too. I don't know. Anyway, but no, I don't know enough. But hey, I'm happy for you. Does that count? All right. And then last of all, from 20th Century Flops. Flops says, please discuss internet side games and if they are intentionally created to get Steve distracted while more important discussions are going on elsewhere. All right. Here's the deal. At Fantasy Movie League, the main game that is run by the league itself, the official game, is, I've described it many times, we've got 8 screens. They give us the top 15 expected movies that week, give us prices for those movies. We've got $1,000 to fill our 8 screens with whatever we want, and your goal is to take the most box office possible. And then people create a ton of side games, all right? Side games are forum games. They're all based on box office and based on the stuff that goes on the boards, the pricing that they're giving us. So there are games that are, you have to spend at least $900 to put your cinema together, however many screens you're going to put in there. And the goal is to have the lowest box office take for the week. And then they track it for the entire season to see who can come out with the absolute lowest one. I think M37 won it last season. And I don't participate in most of the side games, or at least I don't participate regularly. There's one where every week, just guess who can get closest to the dollar amount of the winning box office lineup this week for Fantasy Movie League. There's one now that just started that says, do your best to try and get your theater down to zero. All right, because there's penalties for leaving blank screens. So can you come up with the right number of movies to get just enough positive to offset the negative you get for leaving blank screens to get your cinema exactly at zero for the week? I'm really fascinated by that one. Haven't played it yet. But we'll see how that one turns out. They're running the first week of it right now. So we'll see how it turns out. I think that one looks awesome. There are all sorts of little side games like that. I just, for fun, I started, Kyle brought the Build a Title game from Doug Loves Movies. If you've ever listened to Doug Loves Movies, they do Build a Title where you get a title of a movie. So for example, Kyle started off with Iron Man 3, and then someone has to build off of that. You can either build onto the beginning or to the end, and you can build off of whole words or just syllables. So Iron Man 3, and then someone adds 3 Amigos to that, and so you get Iron Man 3 Amigos. Okay, great. And then someone adds onto Amigos, and they make Ghost off of the goes at the end. So it's Iron Man 3 Amigos. All right, Iron Man 3 Amigos in the Shell. That's the one we built. And it goes on and on. And I think the one we did on our forums, Kyle started it there, and we built it up to like 270-something, 280-something. I don't remember what it was. And so for fun, I took that over to Fantasy Movie League, and I dropped that game in there. And I don't even know. The game has like 200 and some posts now, like 250, I think. So I don't know how many terms have actually been built into it. But it's going, and I just haven't had a chance to keep up with it because, geez, it moves fast. And here's the thing, is I had the stupidest fight this week with someone on those forums, and it was over this stupid game, all right? Because stupid games still have to have stupid integrity, and that's just the way it goes. And so when you build off of something, you have to build with a syllable at least, all right? There's got to be a vowel sound in there, or it doesn't count. And so the string of movies ended with Turner and Hooch. It ended with the word Hooch. And so this guy, I can't remember who it was now. Darn it. I suppose since I got in a fight with him, maybe I shouldn't mention him by name, or her. I don't know if it was a guy or a girl. And anyway, this person then built off of Hooch to make Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. So Hooch to Chitty. And so the only link there, there's no vowel in the link. It's just the CH. All right. It's the digraph CH, which is a single consonant sound. But even if it was a multiple consonant sound, there was still no vowel in there. And so I called foul on it. I went, foul, you can't link those two. And I removed them from the list and then let people go on from there. And the person in question was angry, really angry with me about how that was a perfectly valid matchup. And I'm like, well, okay, except it's not. It's just one consonant sound. And so therefore, it's not going to work. All right. Well, your move is stupid. I assume they had that dumb voice when they did it. I'm sure it was more, your move is stupid. I'm sure that's what they sounded like. That's really unfair. But that was the kind of attitude was, man, they were so angry at me for telling them their move didn't work. And I explained why. I explained the whole thing about vowels and consonants. And I had any time I'm having an argument online with somebody who's really angry and my portion of the argument is explaining what a digraph is, I'm doing it wrong. All right. There was just no diffusing this. I was trying to be so calm about it and I'm trying to just explain. And there's so many crappy things I could think of saying, but I just didn't. I was trying to be very nice about it. And man, there was just no diffusing this one. And you would think that, you know, well, then just let it go. It's not really that important, is it? Well, it's not really that important, but you know, it is a stupid online game that has its stupid online game integrity, and there's rules to it. And I stated those rules, and here they are. I didn't know what else to do. Oh man, it was just dumb. It was dumb. Why do I let myself get into fights like that? I don't even understand. It wasn't even really a fight. It was a disagreement. They were angry and fighting, and I was disagreeing with them. Anyway, that doesn't matter. So anyway, we have a whole bunch of side games that go along with the movies, and it's all movie-related stuff, because that's what everyone's there for. Are these intentionally created to get Steve distracted while more important discussions are going on? Yeah, probably. Steve, if you're listening, look, I love you, Steve, but you come off a little needy sometimes. Steve's in high school, all right? And Steve just wants to be in the middle of everything. He just wants to be a part of it. If there's something cool going on, man, he wants to be in the thick of things. He wants to belong. I gotcha, Steve. But you know what? If you wanted a piece of advice from an old middle-aged dude, and you probably don't, but if you did, don't try so hard. Get in there and have fun and contribute and don't worry about belonging. Don't worry about forcing yourself in there or making that place for you. It'll happen. Jeez. Don't put so much pressure on yourself, man. Relax. So are we intentionally doing that to distract Steve from important discussions? No. Although it is a happy side effect, isn't it? It's all in fun. All right. That is enough of Fantasy Movie League. We are done there. You guys are great. And now let's go over to Facebook. My goodness, it just never ends, does it? So much stuff. Facebook, I have... All right, hold on. I have to refresh. I'm always worried with the way Facebook operates that I'm going to wind up getting to it, and I'm going to wind up missing some of the responses. I'm really paranoid about that because I'm not seeing any notices that people have responded. Well, it says 41 people reached. Someone has to have responded, right? Ah, there they are. See, there. I have responses from people, and yet up at the top where I get my notices, nothing's pointed out there. There's nothing there. I am a little upset by that. All right. My first response is from Nellie, and Nellie says, "Woo! I will try to be more upbeat this week. Derek and I are excited because we're going to PAX East in Boston in April to work for Cards Against Humanity again. You lucky dogs. Oh, those people are so much fun. I love the Cards Against Humanity people. I loved their show. The Concert Against Humanity was amazing. They were spectacular and fun and so cool. I mean, honestly, people, if you have never played Cards Against Humanity, obviously you have to do that. Buy your own set because you want to give these people money because they are super cool people. They're just great people. They're fun, wickedly smart, nerdy people, and you have to be a part of it. Have to. You guys are lucky. I'm very, very jealous of you, Nellie. All right. She says, we can't wait. Have you ever been to Boston? No. I've been all over the East Coast. So, yeah, anything you recommend? No. I've never been to Boston. I have lived in New York for a long time, but never been to New York City, so I couldn't help you there. I've been to Montreal, but, you know, last time I was there, I was 15. Still can't recommend anything to you. That was 30 years ago when I was a kid. So, yeah, I got nothing. I got nothing. I don't travel that much. So, let's see. But there is a reply to Nellie from Sarah Beth. Sarah Beth has recommendations. If you're in Boston, go to Salem. Check out the Witch Trial Memorial. Oh, cool. Cambridge is pretty close too if you want to check out Harvard. Huh, interesting. I would never have thought of going to Salem, but I think I would enjoy that. All right, and then Sarah Beth has her own post on this. And, oh, finally saw Mad Max Fury Road. It's a genre I generally dislike, but you and Darks were both right. It was awesome. I told you it was awesome. I have the disc right here on my shelf. You can't see where I'm pointing, but if you just turned around and looked over at my entertainment center in the top glass cabinet, that's where I keep my Netflix discs, because, yes, we still get CDs from or DVDs from Netflix, so don't judge me. But I have my Netflix DVDs up there, and I have Mad Max Fury Road up there, because even though I've seen it, I need to show it to my wife, because it is that awesome. I love that movie. Sarah Beth continues, I am so impressed at how much character development they did with so little dialogue. I know, I'm right there with you. It was overwhelmingly powerful and just well done. I mean, it was so good. I don't want to rave about it because it's been almost a year since I've seen it. 9 months, whatever it was. Well, when did I see my folks? Yeah, about 9 months ago. And so I don't want to comment because a lot of it has faded. And so that's why I'm so glad I have the disc here. Again, I'm pointing. It's right there. Why? You guys, it's like pointing for a dog. You guys never look where I'm pointing. Ever. I don't know what's wrong. But I'm so excited to see it again. I don't know if it'll have the same effect, on the little screen as it did on the big screen. I mean, obviously it's not going to have the same effect, but I'm hoping it's as good. I'm hoping my wife enjoys it as much as you did, as much as I did, because, great movie. I really, really love that. All right. And then there's a reply to Sarah Beth from Nellie, and Nellie also agrees. So good. I know. All right. That is the end of this podcast. So, thank you to everybody on my website. Thank you to everybody on Facebook who's replying. Well, that's just the two of you. Thank you to you guys on Fantasy Movie League. I really appreciate you guys pitching in. I love everybody. You guys are so good to me. Thank you so much for listening. You know I'll be back next week. We'll make this happen again. There's R2. Say goodnight, R2. Goodnight, guys.